It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up, or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
I'm here to speak to you about a very serious subject, how to make America safe. The vast majority of Americans today do not feel safe. They fear for their children. They fear for themselves. They fear for our police officers who are being targeted with a target on their back. We pray for our police officers in Dallas and Baton Rouge and their families. And we say thank you to the Cleveland Police Department for protecting us. Thank you. We know the risk you're taking. And we say thank you to every police officer and law enforcement agent who's out tonight protecting us, black, white, Latino, of every race, every color, every creed, every sexual orientation. When they come to save your life, they don't ask if you are black or white. They just come to save you.
Sandy Rios in the morning, coming to you live from the Q Quick and Loan Center at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. And I'm telling you, if you did not watch the Republican National Convention last night, you really, really missed it. It was a stunning lineup, and it was an emotional night. There were speeches that I'm going to play some of those for you and let you hear them. I just think that there's so much pent-up concern, angst, rightful anger about what's going on in the country, and you saw it on display last night, and you heard it through the voice of the speaker. And I have to say, if I could be cynical and maybe say something negative, the traditional Republican spokespeople were not there. They wouldn't come. And thank goodness, we didn't need them. So we had a lineup of fabulous speakers. Sheriff David Clark, of course, is from Milwaukee. In fact, Sheriff Clark will be joining us, I think. We've been working on that. But the logistics around here are kind of complicated. And I have to say, there are police everywhere. And everywhere we go, we thank them profusely, my husband and I. Bringing God's blessings and protection and thanking them. They're from all over the country. We talked to some last night. They came all the way from Wisconsin, some from Utah. They didn't have to come. They volunteered. They volunteered to come here knowing what they know and the situation being what it is. And thank God for them. There's just kind of a righteous indignation at the thought that thugs would shut down the Democratic process. And so there's a determination here that I feel and share not with the delegates and also the people here. I'm on Media Row. All right, so Sheriff David Clark stood up to speak last night. He's always powerful, but the emotion given, you know, the killings of the police in Louisiana on Sunday morning, given the shooting, the killing of a policeman in Milwaukee on Sunday, this is what Sheriff David Clark had to say.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to make something very clear. Blue lives matter in America. Now I want to talk to you about something important. Indeed, a concept that 5 law enforcement officers were murdered and 9 more were wounded for earlier this month, and for which three more were murdered 2 days ago in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And that is the importance of making America safe again. You see, I believe that this noble mission is not just a requirement, but a prerequisite for achieving this campaign's goal of making America great again. We simply cannot be great if we do not feel safe in our homes, on our streets, and in our schools. I see this every day at street level, where many Americans increasingly have an uneasiness about the ability of their families to live safely in these troubling times. This transcends race, religion, ethnicity, gender, age, and lifestyle. I often tell residents of Milwaukee and the city and towns that I visit that safety is a shared endeavor. It starts with the willing acceptance of people to play by society's rules. A code, if you will, where we collectively agree upon that ensures stability, fairness, and respect. It is built on a foundation of trust in each other and in the people who administer and enforce society's rules, which at its foundation is the rule of law.
All right, the theme last night was Make America Safe Again. Make America Safe Again. And, of course, there was no lack of speakers. There were people who talked about the loss. You've heard me interview them about the loss of their loved ones through killing, shootings by illegal immigrants who've been allowed to stay, released from jail. Unbelievable stories. And then, of course, the international security, our military. Well, no one better to speak about that than Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who was nearly Donald Trump's choice for vice president. Well, this is part of the powerful speech he gave. Let's listen.
We must regain our ability to truly crush our enemies. And our soldiers deserve to hear from their leaders with clarity and precision. Too often, way too often, our troops are instead but are distracted by trivial matters about what words to use, what terminology is politically correct, and what bathroom door to open up. My God, war is not about bathrooms. War is not about political correctness or words that are meaningless. War is about winning. War is about winning. There is no substitute. There is no such thing as a runner-up, and there are no consolation prizes. A commander-in-chief does not draw red lines and then retreat.
Lieutenant General Michael Flynn speaking emotionally last night. The crowd was just, sometimes when you're in a meeting like that, a gathering, you run out of reserve. You applaud. But the thing about last night, I felt, was that it was not fake emotion. So much of it's yeah, fake emotion. Listen, this was the pouring out from the speakers and the pouring out from the people listening. This was an expression of concern about the country from pillar to post, from our soil to the soil overseas, to all of our men fighting. Marcus Luttrell, who, of course, the movie was made, he wrote a book about being the lone survivor in this attack. He was a Navy SEAL. Rick Perry introduced him very powerfully, and then Marcus Luttrell stood up to speak, but about halfway through the speech, he said, "I'm not used to using a teleprompter. I have to speak from my heart." Now, here's a part of this. I'm asking for a little bit more of it. We'll see if we have it yet, but let's at least play the part that we have. Marcus Luttrell.
"I'm so used to speaking from the heart, when I have to read this, it goes wrong, so I'm just going to go. You ready? Not only do the leaders have to step up and support us, but the family, those of us in here, we're all family. We step up and we back them up too. Not only that, we hold them accountable for every position and office that they hold. Look, either way, The only way we survive this is together, not apart. In order for any life to matter, we all have to matter. You understand?
Part of what he said, too, it was very moving. You know, of course, he's not old, but he talked about the next generation. He said, look, I'm part of the millennial generation. He said, but for those of you who are younger, he said, your war is here. He said, I fought with champions. I fought with heroes, and we need the champions from your generation because your war is here on our soil. It was so moving. But arguably, perhaps, one of the most moving parts of the evening was the mother of Sean Smith, who was murdered in Benghazi. You've seen probably Patricia Smith speak before, but she was at her best last night. There's nothing, Patricia in her own way is eloquent, and she expresses the passionate grief of a mother with grace and dignity and proper anger from my perspective. Let's listen to the first part. We have two clips of Patricia Smith. Jeff, perhaps we should play the longer clip. Let's listen to Patricia Smith.
We lost four brave Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice for the country they chose to serve, and the American people lost the truth. For all of this loss, for all of this grief, for all of the cynicism the tragedy in Benghazi has wrought upon America, I blame Hillary Clinton. I blame Hillary Clinton personally for the death of my son. That's personally.
That's the second clip, and of course she laid out the reasons why she blamed Hillary Clinton, that Hillary lied to her at a time when Hillary Clinton was pretending to comfort the parents over the caskets of these men that had been brought back from Benghazi. She looked in their eyes, in Patricia Smith's eye, and told her he was killed because of this video produced by this film producer, who then was subsequently arrested and put in jail in the most mysterious way. But it was a lie, and Hillary Clinton knew it was a lie. We know by her email that she told her daughter, she told others, it was not because of the video. She lied to these parents. And then when Patricia Smith said publicly that she had been lied to, Hillary Clinton called her a liar. Let's listen to the other clip of Patricia Smith, because as she told her story, the CNN cameras, I was watching CNN, panned the audience, and there was so much emotion. Let's listen once again.
Donald Trump is everything Hillary Clinton is not. He is blunt, direct, and strong. He speaks his mind and his heart. And when it comes to the threat posed by radical Islamic terrorism, he will not hesitate to kill the terrorists who threaten American lives.
All right, so that was those were the power punches that she delivered, but I think that it was the story and the angst of her mother's heart when she talked about her son and his death that was probably the most moving. It was an incredible night. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Melania Trump spoke last night. Maybe it's the first time some of you actually had a chance to hear her, and we're going to play that. Plus, we have a special guest, and I want his take on what he heard. Michael Gonzalez of the Heritage Foundation is with me. And after that, David Barton is going to come and join us, because he was on the floor when the fight was taking place over the rules. And so he's going to talk to us about all of that. So please stay tuned. This is Sandy Rios coming to you live from the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio. And we'll be right back.
Millions of people are asking the question, what has happened to America? Is there hope? What will our children and grandchildren face in years to come? there is no doubt that religious liberties for all men are under attack by those who want to completely eradicate God from our history and our future. On July 30th, we celebrate the 60th anniversary of our national motto, In God We Trust. This motto has been inscribed on monuments and on our coins. It's been boldly proclaimed in speeches from Presidents Lincoln, Kennedy, and Reagan. Our national motto is a reminder to Americans everywhere that there is hope for our future. Go to InGodWeTrust.com to join the movement to restore hope across our nation. Get informed, get excited, and get your In God We Trust decal today. Say it, display it, and claim it. Again, that's InGodWeTrust.com.
Here's Dan Celia with today's Stewardship Moment.
The disciples, and it seems like a whole lot of other people, wanted to set their agenda for Jesus. The disciples wanted him to go to the crowds. And of course, we know that the crowds wanted to crown him king. Jesus knew his mission. Jesus knew his agenda. He had an agenda that had been laid before him by the Father. He was not going to compromise the Father's plan. You know, the Father has a plan for us to stay focused on His will, and that should be a part of our stewardship.
You've just heard a Stewardship Moment with Dan Celia of Financial Issues Ministry, helping you plan, give, and invest wisely. For more information, log on to financialissues.org. That's financialissues.org.
Hello, Americans. From the Republican National Convention, I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next.
How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu.
I was walking down Euclid Avenue in downtown Cleveland yesterday and saw Republican after Republican shaking hands and thanking police officers. About a dozen cops on bicycles rode by, and the crowd cheered their support. The same cannot be said at a fast food restaurant in Phoenix City, Alabama. Sheriff Jay Jones says a worker at the local Taco Bell refused to serve two of his deputies. At first, they thought it was a joke, but the cashier was dead serious. No gorditas for law enforcement. The sheriff was befuddled, says they treat everyone with respect and dignity. Taco Bell has since apologized and fired the cashier, just the latest in a string of incidents involving anti-police fast food workers, from an Arby's in Florida to a Zaxby's in North Carolina. It's just too bad so many fast food joints in America hire finger-licking morons. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
My parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life, that your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise, that you treat people with respect. They taught and showed me values and morals in their daily life. That is a lesson that I continue to pass along to our son. The only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them. Donald intends to represent all the people, not just some of the people. That includes Christians and Jews and Muslims. It includes Hispanics and African Americans and Asians and the poor and the middle class. There will be good times and hard times and unexpected turns. It would not be a Trump contest without excitement and drama. But throughout it all, my husband will remain focused on only one thing: this beautiful country that he loves so much. If I'm honored to serve as First Lady, I will use that wonderful privilege to try to help people in our country who need it the most. One of the many causes dear to my heart is helping children and women. You judge society by how it treats its citizens.
That was Melania Trump, and of course, there's no question about her beauty. I saw her interviewed by Greta Van Susteren a few months ago, and I have to say, you know, we know about her past. We know about, you know, the work that she did, and some of us have a trouble accepting some of the poses, some of the things that she did as a profession. But when I saw her interviewed by Greta, my thoughts were, this is a woman who, yeah, this was her past. She's graced with this incredible beauty. But she spoke as a dedicated mother of their son. They don't have a nanny. She takes care of him. People change. And yes, I'm inclined to want to believe that. I think she's grown into a woman who is a lady who loves her son and wants to be a great mother. She talked about her values. There was some discussion. Politico said that she plagiarized part of her speech from Michelle Obama. And when you look at the theme, she talks about being raised by parents who taught her values, about raising her son. That's the part that's plagiarized. Michelle Obama's the only person that ever had talked about parents who taught her values. It's really silly. I guess that's the only thing they could criticize her on. But you heard her say in her beautiful accent, I think she speaks six languages. She said, my husband will represent all the people, and she talked about the nationalities. Well, Mike Gonzalez is joining me this morning. He's a senior fellow at the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation. He was with the Bush administration as a speechwriter for Securities and Exchange, which, Mike, that's no small thing. Most of us can't even understand that, much less write speeches about it. But he wrote a book, and we've talked to him about his book called A Race for the Future, how conservatives can break the liberal monopoly on Hispanic Americans. But he was born in Cuba, left at age 12. He has spent months living in and reporting from Afghanistan, Pakistan, China, Panama, Cyprus, and all kinds of things. So international affairs is his bailiwick, and certainly multiculturalism in this country. Mike, thanks for joining me.
This is the first time we, as I thank you for having me on, this is the first time we do this live, by the way.
Yeah, it's nice to see you face to face. It's
and,
cool.
And I want to thank you for everything you do. Well, this you do it so well, and I want to thank you for everything you do.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. What did you think about Melania's speech? Now, here she is, potentially the first foreign-born, naturalized citizen. I think she's the first, certainly. As recently as she has been, she speaks with a foreign accent. She speaks like six languages. But how did her message and her presentation strike you, Mike?
I think obviously having somebody who is an immigrant and talks about the immigrant experience and talks about the ability to speak other languages is a good thing. Obviously, what I always say is that it's a virtue to be bilingual, trilingual, multilingual. It is a problem when the country is bilingual. For the individual, it's a virtue.
That's a great point.
For the country, it is a huge problem.
Yeah,
and countries don't end up well or don't do well when they're divided. Right. And they get divided. And this is the problem I think we've had with almost 8 years of the Obama administration. And I think Sheriff Clark, by the way, if you want to talk about it, I think Sheriff Clark has such a good speech when he talked about, you know, all of us living collectively by the code. And he talked about the country together rather than being divided. I'll be honest with you. I don't like it when conservatives talk about whites and African Americans and Hispanics and Asian Americans. Conservatives are never going to do identity politics better than the other side. Let's not try. You know, let's talk about America and what let's be colorblind and talk about what all of us together can do.
Oh, I totally agree. Mike, I just interviewed Lonnie, can't think of his last name, but he's on our urban network. He's black, he's a black pastor. And I apologized to him right up front. I said, of all things, here now, I have to talk to you about race. And, you know, I wanted to talk about the country and what's going on, but now we have to talk about Black Lives Matter and shootings and racism. And I'm with you. We are Americans, and certainly for people of faith beyond that, we have a deeper bond. And so I'm with you. We've got to get past just only talking about these. We are Americans. And who was it that said, So beautifully on the platform, something that you certainly and I certainly already know, that anyone can become an American.
Yeah, Reagan put it so well. Reagan really got this. And I tell you, I would hate for conservatives to also, you know, get into identity politics and identify whites as another group that needs to be catered to. We're all, you know, why we as a movement really should think of the whole is because right there our ethos, our creed is in the Declaration of Independence. When Jefferson writes about natural law and the law of God's nature, that when if you believe that God, natural law is the basis of our law, then that is, you know, the laws of physics and the laws of motion apply universally to all human beings. We all have the right, these unalienable rights that God has given us at creation, and these are universal.
Yeah, like for instance, I would just say it's a great illustration because I was thinking about gravity. You know, like right. Do the races fall differently? You know,
exactly.
Do you fall differently from a window if you jump out? No, I mean you're right. The laws apply equally, and that's what the civil laws. The same thing. This is America. This is what we do. We apply the law equally. At least that's what we're supposed
to
do.
And our American creed set out in the Declaration sets, you know, the legitimacy comes from the laws of nature and in nature's God. Yeah. We believe in natural law. That's mm-hmm. what we believe that we have these rights to life, liberty, self-preservation. And these things are applicable to all Americans.
Yeah. And even further, just to spell this out, that the whole notion that I can move to China, I'm not sure I could become a citizen. I'm not sure they would afford that, but I can never become Chinese. If I go to Japan, which I have been to Japan, I can never become Japanese.
Right.
But anyone can come here
right.
because you can become an American by virtue of ideas,
right.
shared ideas, shared language,
right.
shared ideas,
right.
shared system.
Right.
And then we are, it's just it really is an amazing thing. It's a beautiful thing. And that is the exceptionalism of America,
yes.
one of the many things.
G.K. Chesterton talked about this in the 19th century. He said, America is a creedal nation. In France, it's DNA. When I go back to northwestern Spain, to my grandmother's village, it's DNA. Everybody's a cousin in the village. We're not DNA. We're not bound by DNA. You know, Lincoln talked about this. The founding fathers talked about this. We have the American creed. As long as you abide by it, as Sheriff Clark said, live by the code.
Wow. But beyond Sheriff Clark, what did you think about last night? Mike, the overall feel of it and the speeches. I've already said what I think, but I'm curious to know how it struck you.
I think that the country is in a bad place and there's a need for safety. I think that we're more divided than ever. I'm sorry, when President Obama goes out and says, we're not as divided as we seem, and then the next day the New York Times comes out with this opinion poll that says 75% of Americans say, you know, race relations are really bad. We are divided. So I think for this speech, one of the theme of the speeches were all about safety.
Mm-hmm. And make America safe again.
And I think we as a country, feel that this is we're kind of in a chaotic. It's bordering on
lawlessness.
You know, I think that people want to feel safe.
Yeah,
they do.
And people of all races.
Yeah,
has nothing to do with, again.
We're all Americans.
We all want to raise our families and live in peace. And,
right.
You know, I was just talking, when I was talking to our black pastor friend Lonnie, we were just talking about how with these police shootings, you know, it's the police who keep the inner cities safe. I remember my husband, who's an FBI agent, saying talking about his police friends in Chicago. They went into a black neighborhood, which they always did, one of the worst. And this woman is just crying. She says, thank God for the white policeman. That's what she said, this black woman living in the inner city. Because it doesn't matter. It's like Giuliani said, when they come to save you, they're not looking to see who you are
right.
and where you're from. They're coming to take care of you.
Right.
Isn't about race. So
it's the thin blue line that keeps chaos away from us. And when I drive down so many cities and I see poor neighborhoods, and I think about that poor mother who lives there, who has to fear for her children. And why isn't America doing right by her? You know what? It is. It's troubling. We all need. We should all feel safe.
And this chaotic, murderous movement, Black Lives Matter, New Black Panthers, the and It's not just by, look, they're fueled by George Soros, the white Hungarian. I mean, this movement is evil. It isn't about a color. And they want to kill and murder and create chaos everywhere, and they don't care what you look like or what your nationality is. They just want power and destruction. And so that, I say that a lot, Michael, and I probably will continue to say it until people understand this is really not about race. All right.
I was in New York, by the way, when Giuliani was elected mayor. I lived on the Dinkins. I lived in New York many times, but I lived on the Dinkins and I lived on the Giuliani. To me, the greatest thing Giuliani did, well, he was great at 9/11, but it's what he did the years before when he turned New York around. Nobody thought that city could be turned around the way he did.
I remember that. Cleaned it up, cleaned the porn districts up.
And you had crime rates that went back to 1950s level. Yeah. Nobody thought that could be done.
And now it's chaos again. I mean, is it really? I mean, it's just amazing. All right, so I'm going to do exactly the opposite of what we've been talking about. Okay, so you wrote your book about the liberal monopoly on Hispanic Americans. So put yourself, you are very Americanized and you've been here a long time, but put yourself, if you can, in the skin of maybe someone who's more Latino in their culture in this country watching that last night. What do you think they might have thought?
I think the work with Hispanics actually has to do with going out and speaking with them as Americans, going out to their neighbor. I always like to tell the story of Tip O'Neill, who had a neighbor, and he said that she had been his neighbor for decades. In one election day, he said, "So, you voted for me?" And she said, "No, Tip, I didn't." And he said, "Why not?" He said, "You never asked me to." And I think that conservatives need to go out and speak with Hispanics, not with a different message, with the same pro-family, pro-community, education. If you look at the latest Pew research that came out less than a week ago, again, immigration went from fourth to fifth. The economy, education, a whole host of things come ahead of immigration for Hispanic Americans. So it turns out that they're the same as everybody else. You know, that they really care about jobs. They care about being able to send their children to good schools where they're not going to be lost to a gang, where they're not going to be lost to peer pressure, where they're going to be taught so they can succeed in a knowledge economy. These are the things that you need. And politicians need to go to all neighborhoods, not just Hispanic neighborhoods, all neighborhoods, and speak about these common sense ideas.
Michael, all right, let's get
policy.
Let's get broader, because you're an international expert. I'm sure the world, I would think, that many people around the world were watching last night. And I'm wondering, like France, the people of France are living their own chaos. Of course, they wouldn't be watching American television. I'm surprised. I was in Istanbul, Turkey, and I was buying T-shirts. And I used to be with Fox. I was with them for 8 years. But I was on doing commentary occasionally. I wasn't on every day. And the T-shirt vendor in English looked at me as I was paying. He said, "I see you on TV," which in Turkey they were watching it. So I know a lot of people internationally are watching. If they were watching, what do you think they might have thought about what was happening last night?
I think they do watch, by the way. I think America is really the center of the world, and people all over the world do watch us. What I hope people got out of last night is that we're not as divided as our enemies want us to be. Sadly, we are a divided country right now, and we didn't come together at Orlando. We didn't come together at Dallas. We seem, with each crisis, at 9/11 we came together.
Yes.
But I haven't seen that in any of the crises that we've had in the last 2 or 3 years. I want the world not to think that we're a divided country, because if they do, they're really going to try to come in and do us harm.
Well, that's
our enemies.
That's where the media comes in, because you and I see that every night. So we feel that we're divided, and we get, you know, really stirred up and upset. And So it's good for us to see our country united in a meeting like last night. You know, it's interesting. Here's the music, so we got it quick. But I was watching CNN and PBS last night, and I was amazed. The commentators were pretty much, I thought, silenced by these speeches. They tried to say a few things, but even they were going, "Wow, that kind of makes sense." You know, it was just amazing. Mike Gonzalez, always a pleasure.
Thank you for joining me.
My pleasure. Heritage Foundation, Mike is an expert on international relations, and you can be sure that we will talk again soon. Thank you so much. Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty HealthShare.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
In the Trenches with Jeremy Wiggins.
This show is about trying to catch you up, talk about the issues, kind of zero in.
A frontline report from the culture war.
I hope that you'll leave here entertained as well as informed.
In the Trenches.
This is where we take a look at what's going on around the American Family Association. Give it a little bit of a colorful flavor. It's a lot of stuff.
In the Trenches with Jeremy Wiggins. Saturday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Who says you can't have your cake and eat it too? If you're like a lot of people, you would like to support the culture-changing efforts of the American Family Association. But there's the very pressing reality that your income must meet your current needs as well as act as seed for future income, either for the short term or for life. A charitable gift annuity might be your answer. A charitable gift annuity offers a unique method for both planning ahead for permanent income and supporting the work of the American Family Association. An AFA Foundation representative will walk you through the details of creating a charitable gift annuity, allowing you to decide if a charitable gift annuity is right for your individual financial situation. Connect with us today by calling 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit us online at afafoundation.net.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. To paraphrase Winston Churchill, never have so many been so confused for so long about two little words, Allahu Akbar. That would, of course, be the Muslim invocation of divine blessing. Typically, it is uttered by jihadists in the midst of their murderous and often suicidal rampages. We are usually told it translates as, God is great. In fact, it is a supremacist battle cry. God is greater. Even more astonishing than systematic government and media failure to correctly convey the meaning of this phrase is the insistence that its recitation in the act of executing or maiming others is not instructive. This isn't hard. When killers using guns, trucks, suicide bombs, or axes shout Allahu Akbar, they mean for us to die or submit. We better get this right and fight back effectively if we don't like those choices. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Brett, good evening. These are the kinds of scenes you don't ever see at modern political conventions. But then again, of course, this is not your typical election year. What happened was that forces loyal to Senator Ted Cruz, led by the likes of Ken Cuccinelli, the former Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, and others, they claimed to represent the grassroots. They allied themselves with the so-called never-Trumpers to try and shape the rules package that would govern these proceedings. They were mostly shut out of the proceedings of the Rules Committee here last week, so this was going to be their last stand. plan. They were demanding a recorded vote on the adoption of that rules package. And instead, they got a voice vote where the ayes were said to have prevailed, even though it sounded like a very divided chamber. That's what caused all of the shouting, the cries of shame. Ken Cuccinelli throwing his credentials to the floor briefly. What was really at issue was whether Ted Cruz would have his name placed in nomination. It appears he will. Whether there would be changes to the 2020 process to reward closed primary states. That would reward Ted Cruz. That did not occur. In the end, there was feverish negotiations all of last night, all the way up through the bedlam erupting here on the floor. The RNC and the Trump campaign was whipping the delegates, and they got a lot of delegates to peel off in the end there, Brett.
All right, that's James Rosen reporting. You know, early in the day, the delegates met on the floor, and there were meetings all last week. The Rules Committee, the Platform Committee was meeting, and there was, you know, some of the important work that has been taking place has been taking place behind closed doors. Yesterday you saw it alive on the floor, but I'm not sure that's exactly what happened because it's very complex. So I know who knows. I asked David Barton to join us this morning because David, of course, you know, is the founder of Wall Builders, which is this phenomenal resource of American history. And some other time we'll talk about that. But this morning he is here with me because he is part of the platform committee. He was deeply involved and has been for several years in the nuts and bolts of bringing the Republican Party to the place where it is now. David's been one of the warriors in doing that. So thank you, first of all, for joining me this morning, David, because I know it was a long day yesterday.
No problem, Sandy. Happy to be with you.
Yeah. All right. So so fix what James Rosen said.
It was not an alliance between Cruz people and Never Trumpers. That was never it at all. It was a completely different thing where it was a package of decentralization rules. The RNC, as it has for a long time, has moved the power to the top. This was moved power back down. So among it was an offered incentive to say, if you as a state will get away from closed primaries or open primaries, go to closed primaries, we'll give a bonus of 20% extra delegates. And that was designed not for Cruz. Cruz is not even in this thing. This is designed for the future, and it's particularly designed for states like Texas where we have open primaries. And when you have an uncontested Democrat race, they send the Democrats over to vote for what they consider to be the weakest Republican.
How did that ever start, David? That just seems silly. This whole election cycle, my husband and I have said, how did they ever start doing open primaries when people of the party are choosing their candidate? Why would you open your primary up like
it's
that?
Like having a forestry association and you're choosing your officers and you're letting all the environmentalists come vote in the forestry, you know, loggers. That doesn't make sense that you let people out. You know, you're having a Jewish association meeting and you let all the Baptists and Catholics come vote for the Jewish leader. It doesn't make sense.
Well, the problem is, too, they're just not as informed. If they don't even care enough to be part of the party, how are they going to really know enough about who even have the right to select the candidate?
And that's the thing. When you choose a sheriff's candidate or you choose a state rep candidate, if they're on the Republican ticket, then they're chosen by Republicans supposedly. And what happens is that's not it. So the rules package had nothing to do with the Never Trumpers. Now, we knew that was the problem, that they would associate it with that because of the protests going. But they were good rules. They were designed literally to decentralize. See, RNC, among other things, tells you there's rules in the RNC the RNC doesn't follow. And so some of the rules packages were to say that if the RNC doesn't follow its own rules, there's penalties for not following your own rules. And so the RNC did not want this. One-third of the members of the Rules Committee were RNC members, and it was really the RNC protecting its own tail more than anything.
One thing that happened, David, is that from the public's perspective, and I think Fox had a hand in this, they presented this whole argument as an argument about freeing delegates who were committed to other candidates, or who were because of the rules, were supposed to vote for Trump, freeing them so they could vote for, according, you know, sort of like their free conscience,
their
of who
conscience,
they should vote for.
That's
yeah.
Right.
So they made it all about that, but really that was only a very small part of this.
Oh,
right?
That was such a tiny segment of the convention. I mean, that's I ran a Cruz super PAC, and I'm not into free the delegates. Oh, my gosh. That's why, by the way, the reason that Ted said he didn't want that changed. Because what happens is you're saying, let's follow the process. I don't like the outcome of the process. I want to change the process. You can't do that.
So
you follow the process.
So you're not. You were just. Let's repeat that. You were head of the Cruz delegation in Texas. You weren't in favor of
that. I ran one of
Ted Cruz wasn't
super
in favor of
that. That's right. That's right.
So why did James? Why are they spinning it this way? Because they're making it sound like it's Cruz doing what he's always doing.
Because the RNC feeds it to him that way.
All right. So So I'm understood that it got really heated. And when you say the RNC, you're talking about Reince Priebus. You're talking about Paul Ryan, right?
No, Ryan's not part of this.
Oh, I thought Ryan. Okay, I read a report. And, you know, you were there. I don't know. I read a report that Ryan was trying to peel off states so that there would not be this recorded vote, that he was actively involved behind the scenes and trying to...
That's a different motivation, because what they want on national TV is a very smooth convention. And so it has nothing to do with the philosophy of Paul Ryan or anything else. They're trying to present a united front. And so they would have done a better job presenting a united front if they had let the large segment have their voice and then say, okay, you guys lost the vote. You know, it takes seven states to get a recorded floor vote. You've only got six. Instead of shutting them out, they should have said, hey, here's the rules. And then everybody's happy with the rules once you follow it.
All right, so Ken Cuccinelli and Morton Blackwell, as I understand, that's the... I know there were lots of resolutions, and I don't, honestly, David, I just know bare smidgens about this. They proposed a rule, and that was the one that they refused to allow a voice, a recorded vote on?
They proposed a whole lot of rules changes throughout the days, 3 days or so of the rules convention. Or the rules committee, and most of them got voted down. At that point, the RNC got their members rallied, and they pulled Trump in and said, hey, this is all about you, which it wasn't.
Which it wasn't, and so then he joined in strong
arm. He joined them, that's right. And so it ended up being about, I'm going to say, 80 to 25 or 80 to 30 is the margin of vote on most things. But the one that they wanted most and brought to the floor was the single rule on, let's get closed primaries. And the media said, well, that's all about Ted running in 4 years. Well, there's no guarantee Ted's going to run at all. Give me a break. I mean, we're not even through this election cycle. It was all about, you know, I talked to a guy from Iowa, and their sheriff's race was decided, a Republican sheriff's race was decided, but Democrats coming over and voting in that race. So this is about Republicans everywhere.
Yeah, we've seen that happen time and time again. Mm-hmm. I just think, I'm not sure who argues in favor of that. I just have never heard an argument that makes any sense to allow that. So you're trying to stop it, but you failed. Did you feel on the voice vote that it was a legitimate call, that the ayes or the nays had it? Because sometimes, you know, the Democratic Convention is famous for their removing God from their platform, and the voice vote didn't seem to comport with what the chair, you know, the ayes have it or whatever he's it. Did you feel it was fair?
I would have said that probably the vote went in favor against the rules. And so had there been a recorded vote, the deal is, if you'd had a recorded vote, they said there was only six states that wanted it. So six states out of 56 delegations, because you have six territorial delegations, you're talking at that point about, 10% of the delegates. But I think had there been a recorded vote, you would have seen about 35% of the delegates say, we want closed primaries. And that then becomes a great message to the RNC to change your rules.
Right.
And so that's the significance of having that floor vote. Not that they thought they would win it, because there had been no debate on the floor. So everybody on the floor is hearing whatever the media says, so they're voting on knowledge they have. But had there been a significant vote recorded, then the RNC Rules Committee now has a real clear indication that you got a whole lot of people that won't close primaries. So that was the objective.
David, I know you were in the room, so you experienced all those emotions. We saw it on, I was watching on a television screen, and there were, you know, texts at the bottom. And so I couldn't really, I couldn't feel what was going on. And I said, so do you think that people are so mad?
No.
No.
I mean, they were mad at the way that was handled, because when it was done, there clearly was a very loud no, and he already had the gavel, banged it down so the ayes have it. And you're going, wait a minute. At least you call for division or something else when it's that close. And so people that were out said, you know, it sounded really close to us. And even Rosen said it sounded like, or one of the commentators before Rosen said it sounded like the nose might have had it. So the fact that they ran it through so fast is probably what made people mad. But once it was over and done with, you know, I'm not seeing people walking around pouting and saying, I'm never going to do it. It's just not part of it.
All right, how about that Never Trump movement? Is that done now? I mean, are they, there's no way now they could, correct? Is it correct? There's no way they can do something on the floor that would harm Donald or stop Donald Trump's candidacy.
They think there's still a way, but you might as well believe that lightning is going to strike the same tree five times in a row. I mean, it's just...
But they're still determined.
They're determined, and I didn't see any way when they came into this thing that there was a way they could do it, because you couldn't get the rules changed, and the only way you can do that is off the rules, and that rule was not going to change. I mean, even Ted didn't want that rule to change.
All right, so you were in the room last night during the speeches, right?
Mm-hmm.
We were in the hotel room. You didn't hear me say, but I was just blown away. I was I thought, you know, all the politicians that stayed home, thank you. Thank all of you for not coming. Thank you so much. Because what we saw on the platform last night was powerful. So I've already said my piece. I want to know what you think.
Well, it was powerful. And it was a great... you know, there were so many people that were politically incorrect last night. And it was so refreshing.
It's,
you know,
true. Like Lucas Luttrell. I'm not used to using a teleprompter. I'm just going to talk to you.
That's right.
And he was just so moving.
And Giuliani. Yeah. When was the last time you seen Giuliani that animated? I mean, shouting. And he was like a revival preacher. But he was calling words that the Obama administration refuses to use. You know, radical Islamic terrorism. And they've scourged it from their man. And the common American says, we know who the enemy is. How come you guys won't name him? And it was as refreshing as anything to see people say, you know, we really don't care what the pressure is on this thing. Here's the deal. And it was just nice to see that kind of political incorrectness.
You know, it's one thing to watch it on television, which I did, till I fell asleep. I just couldn't last through the whole thing. But I wanted to. But it's different to be in the room. So what did you see in the room, and what did you observe that we wouldn't know?
Ooh, good question. Well, I don't know that it's what you wouldn't know, but there are so many first-time delegates here. And they came out starry-eyed saying, man, this is unbelievable. We had no idea this is what a national convention was. And the speeches last night really stirred them. You know, and these are the activists. These are the people that paid out of their own money. And a lot of these guys that I served on platform committee with, just common farmers and ranchers. And this is the only time in their life they'll do this. And they got there, and it was like they were starry-eyed just like everybody else. And it was a lot of fun to see.
You know, one observation I made, when Lucas Luttrell was speaking and Patricia Smith, that package, the camera, I was watching CNN. They were painting, and people were weeping. Just all, so many people were just, I don't mean lots, I just mean so moved.
Mm-hmm.
And then they panned to Donald Trump's son. I think it was Eric. And the thing that struck me about it was, David, people, politicians will sit in a room and they know they're being watched and mm-hmm. they feign, they take on a look or there's something.
Mm-hmm.
Man, he was in the moment. He was with the people in that room. And the look on his face wasn't one of plastic or manufactured. It was just, you know, he was blown away, it seemed to me, himself. And I just, that moved me. Mm-hmm. But these are people that are used to public attention. They don't need any of this. And they have the luxury then of being themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Not being turned by all the attention that they're going to get. And that comports to their favor. What in the room, I mean, I'm guessing Patricia Smith might have been the most emotional, but who did you feel was the most powerful in that room last night?
Well, from where I sat, she was the most emotional to all of those who were there. I think the most emotional speaker may have been Giuliani, you know, because he just was out of his box. I've just never seen him, you know, when he ran for president, he was very modulated and very controlled, but he was pounding the pulpit last night. And so, you know, from the real life people who've been through it, like Benghazi to Marcus to Giuliani, who's, you know, was in Homeland Security kind of stuff himself.
Lieutenant General Michael Flynn.
Yeah, Flynn.
Calling for the, jail for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, you know, and Flynn, my gosh, he was so out of his element. I mean, he's never used a teleprompter, as you could tell.
Yeah.
But his passion came through, too.
Yeah.
It was very good.
It was really something. And David, to you and your wife, who's our silent partner here, Cheryl, thank you for all that you've put into this. You guys have been here for almost 2 weeks. And you are the kinds of people that behind the scenes, you know, have put the pedal to the metal on behalf of all of us for a good outcome. We didn't even talk about the platform. Okay, we'll talk about the platform later. It's good, right?
It is. It's the best. Okay. It's the best in my lifetime. Most conservative in my lifetime.
Isn't that something? That is really something. All right, Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.